I'm honored tonight to introduce Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar. I will not be as funny as she will. She will in turn introduce the two remarkable individuals who received the ELI 2013 Environmental Achievement Award, George P. Schultz, Thomas F. Steyer. Both have distinguished themselves for their extraordinary work in advancing clean energy and reducing climate change. Senator Klobuchar is the first woman to be elected to the United States Senate from Minnesota. This path-breaking achievement was presaged by her early accomplishments. After receiving her Bachelor of Arts degree in Political Science from Yale University, magna cum laude, and her law degree from the University of Chicago Law School, she practiced law in Minneapolis, becoming a partner in two of Minneapolis's leading law firms. She was then elected county prosecutor for Hennepin County, which includes Minneapolis and 45 suburbs. In 2006, she was elected to the United States Senate with 58% of the vote. In 2012, she's reelected with 65% of the vote. Her career in the Senate is marked by early and continued leadership of initiatives that would advance clean, renewable energy and address climate change. In June of 2007, only a few months after she was sworn in, she introduced her first major initiative, the Klobuchar Snow-Bingaman Amendment to the Energy Bill of 2007. This carbon counter amendment would have established the first national greenhouse gas registry. In addition, she joined a bipartisan group of senators that struck a key deal to raise the corporate average fuel economy standards for cars, trucks, and SUVs by 10 miles per gallon over 10 years. In April to June of 2008, the Senate was considering the Lieberman-Warner climate change bill that would establish a national cap and trade program to reduce CO2 emissions. She authored with Senator Snow the bill's first title to establish a national greenhouse gas registry, a bipartisan effort typical of Senator Klobuchar's leadership. Thus, in the past few weeks, Senator Klobuchar was one of the bipartisan group of 14 senators, led by Senator Collins, that worked hard to craft a bipartisan solution to the end of government shutdown. Each week during the debate on the Lieberman-Warner bill, Senator Klobuchar gave a major floor speech addressing the benefits and goals of the bill. Here's an example. We need a bold energy policy. We need to increase vehicle fuel efficiency, make a national commitment to generate electricity from renewables, and invest research in cutting-edge technologies for alternative fuels and renewable energy sources. This is what we need to do. In February 2012, speaking on the Senate floor, in support of extending tax incentives that helped develop the next generation of biofuels and renewable energy, Senator Klobuchar concluded, "What we need now is a comprehensive national blueprint for energy policy in this country, a solution that preserves the integrity of our air, our water, and natural resources, that gives businesses the incentives to research and develop new sources of energy, that invest in the next generation of American innovation. This is our challenge." You can't get more clear-cut than that. This is what we need to do. This is our challenge. Who better to introduce our annual award honorees than Senator Amy Klobuchar?
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Ed, and thank you. I think you may know that we had a break for the week for the Senate, and I just want to thank your group for bringing me back to Washington, because I hadn't had enough of it for 3 weeks. So thank you so much, but I wouldn't have missed it. I want to thank all of you in the audience today, and I'm honored to be here with such an outstanding group to present the ELI's prestigious 2013 Environmental Achievement Award, and to give you a few words first about what's been going on in Washington, or what hasn't been going on, and actually to try to give you some hope for the future. You first need to know that I didn't grow up with Washington politics. I came from Minnesota, where, in the words of our pseudo-poet laureate, Garrison Keillor, the women are strong, right? The men are good-looking, and all the environmental lawyers are above average. But in fact, my only job in Washington, and my first job, was as an intern for Vice President Mondale, where they had me crawl around, very glamorous. When I was in college, I crawled around under the desk and wrote down all the serial numbers of his entire staff. But what I like to tell young people, that was my first job in Washington, and this was my second, so do well on your internships. And then actually my only official visit to Washington before I came to the Senate was when I was the elected prosecutor in Hennepin County, and I still remember I got to go when Bill Clinton introduced the hate crimes bill and had this big event at the White House, and somehow at the last minute I got to introduce him because of some work I'd done in the topic, and I was standing outside of the East Room and had never even been in the White House, not even on a tour. And the band was there, and they played that Hail to the Chief, you know, da, 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 da. And I just start walking in to where I'm supposed to go on the stage, and all of a sudden I feel this big hand on my shoulder, and this voice says, I know you're going to do great out there, but when they play that song, I usually go first. That was true. That was my first official visit to Washington, D.C. So then I came to the Senate in 2006, ready to get things done. And actually, we worked really hard. I was in that group with Ted Kennedy that tried to get the first immigration bill done, and I feel really good about what the Senate did just now, the last few months. But it's been not the easiest time to be in Washington. And I'm someone, my Republican friends here know, who always tries to work across the aisle. Two-thirds of the bills that I have led have been with Republicans. But I was not quite prepared for what we saw in the past month. People who were denying that we even had to pay our bills, people who were using this government shutdown, it appeared at first for a partisan poison pill of messaging. And I think in the end, there was chaos, but in the end, there may be opportunity. Part of it was the 14 of us in the Senate that came together under Susan Collins' leadership, six Democrats, one independent, seven Republicans. Is that someone from Maine? Very good. While in the end, Senator Reid, Senator McConnell negotiated the final deal, a lot of the elements that we talked about in that group, and clearly those were seven Republicans, they needed to get it done, were in the final agreement. You may have heard that half of the people in that group were women. I would note that we now have 20 women in the Senate. We're very good friends. I just had them all over to a Minnesota potluck dinner at my apartment a few weeks ago. But every single woman in the Senate voted for that compromise, just to give you a sense of the women. This is our record point, not our high water mark. I did notice, and I noted in a tweet a few months ago, that for the first time in the history of the United States of America, we actually had a traffic jam in the women's senator's bathroom. But so this is a sea change, and I think you're going to see more of that leadership in the months to come, with Patty Murray heading up the Budget Committee in the Senate, and Barbara Mikulski heading up the Appropriations Committee. I personally think it makes a difference. So what did this agreement do? Well, it bought us some time to negotiate something a little more substantive as we look at the sequestration cuts coming up in mid-January. And a lot of people say, oh, you kicked the can down the road. But I'm not sure people realize that if we just kicked the can down the road for a year, those sequestration cuts would take effect, which are, of course, on 20% of the budget. 70% of the debt reduction we've done so far, $2.4 trillion, is in the cut area, where most of the, even most conservative, debt commissions have come out and said it should be about a 2-to-1 ratio, 3-to-1 ratio. And so we have an opportunity now, by having this deadline of January 15th, of actually looking for some reform to some of the government programs, to look at some potential loopholes, revenue, so we can have a more balanced approach going forward on the budget. So it was not the easiest time. I will say it was better than New Year's Eve. That was my personal low point, where there you are, you know, midnight, and I turn to my left and I see Harry Reid, and turn to my right and see Mitch McConnell, every girl's dream, the stroke of midnight. And I thought I thought that moment was going to be the low point, but no, we had the last month. Now, let me just tell you some of the reasons I think we can come out of this, and I'm going to get to the environmental and energy repercussions of this as well, and why I think there may be some opportunities here. First of all, you have, for the first time, in a very big, explosive way, some of the moderate Republicans and others in the Republican Party that have been willing to speak out. You have the chamber talking about challenging some of the Tea Party people. You have people taking on people like Ted Cruz. I noted at the gridiron speech I gave a few months ago that in this town, when we hear about a bad Cruz, we don't know if it's Carnival or Ted. We have, okay, that's the only really political joke I'm going to make, okay? So just like deal with it. I'm sorry, Texans, sorry. The truth is, when you look at what happened here, you had John McCain on TV calling this the height of foolishness. You had Karl Rove commissioning a poll showing that 58% of independents thought that you shouldn't shut down the government over the Affordable Care Act. You know something's up when that is going on. The palpable anger of the American citizens can be felt not only in these public opinion polls. There's another one came out today, but I don't think you need a poll to hear what I hear when I was out in Fargo this morning with Senator Hoeven. When you hear citizens just say, "We're so glad you guys are doing an event on the Farm Bill together. Thank you." Or you hear people at a food bank in Minneapolis saying, "Look, we have people that don't have enough food that are hungry. Why can't you get your act together?" People are just sick and tired of members of Congress who are standing in the opposite corners of the boxing ring throwing punches. And I would say this is especially true in my state, where we are down to 5.1% unemployment. We have a record exports. They really feel that we're on the cusp of economic opportunity, particularly in the energy area. And one of the only things that's holding us back, that's doing the things that we need to do about climate change, doing the things we need to do about energy, is an intransigent group, people that don't want to compromise, this red light, green light game that we play with our tax code that just is no way to encourage business investment. But as I mentioned, in the mess can come opportunity. Opportunity to do something more with the long-term budget. Suddenly the Farm Bill, which as you know, contains some good conservation measures supported by nearly every conservation group in the country, $24 billion in debt reduction over the current Farm Bill because of the fact that we went away from the direct agriculture subsidies to crop insurance. Immigration bill, $160 billion in debt reduction in 10 years, right? So we're just gonna pass that up? It doesn't make any sense at all. Suddenly these things have a little bit more reason to resonate in the minds of more moderate Republicans and the people of this country. The Shaheen-Portman energy bill, right? We had to stop that about a month ago, but these are all things that can lead to good results for our country. And I truly believe that courage in the next few months and really the next 2 years is not going to be about standing by yourself in the Senate for 21 hours and giving a speech in an empty chamber about green eggs and ham. Courage is going to be instead whether or not you're willing to stand next to someone you don't always agree with for the betterment of this country. And that is the hope that I have for this Congress. Now, when it comes to energy and environmental policy, I think you've seen this gridlock before. Many of you in this room say, yeah, well, what we saw in the last few weeks, we've been seeing forever, even for the simplest changes to environmental policy. As was mentioned, I worked early on in Kent Conrad's group, the bipartisan energy group. We were stymieing in our efforts. And I think our nation has had many missed opportunities in the last decade or so. I'd say, I'll point to a few of them, bipartisan in my approach. The first would be immediately after 9/11, certainly invading Afghanistan and combating terrorism were the top priorities. But I still believe in my heart of hearts that if President Bush had seized that moment and with the American people behind him and stood up and said, you know what, we need to make our nation truly independent from the countries involved and made a new case for American energy policy, I truly believe that 80% of the people would have said, sign me up. Okay. That didn't happen. We're not clapping because it didn't happen. The second moment was more of Congress's fault. It was during the summer of 2008. I was there on the floor. We did take action, as was mentioned, to raise gas mileage standards. By the way, that's a moment I'll never forget, that press conference. One of the more senior members of the Senate was there. And I stood up and I said, this is so great to be involved in this effort. It was my first press conference. I said, we haven't raised the gas mileage standard since I was in junior high. And the next member stood up and said, I was here when that happened. Okay, so I'm not doing that again. But so we did do something back at that time. And we also made energy efficiency improvements for consumer goods. You remember that? Policies that I like to call building a fridge to the next century. But it's hard to make environmental jokes, you know. So, but we didn't make the same kind of progress on a comprehensive energy and environment plan like we should have at that time. And I still remember we were one vote short of beating the filibuster on a national renewable energy standard. Third moment was when President Obama first came into office. I remember he met with the Democrats. He wanted to move forward immediately on a renewable energy standard then. As I mentioned, we had been only one vote short in the past. And for some reason, the decision was made not to do that. I actually think that it would have had wings. We would have been able to get that done. I think a decision might have been made that we should do something bigger, which was right. But unfortunately, all the eggs went into that basket. And while I supported, as was noted, cap and trade, given the state of the economy at that time, and given the resistance we encountered, it didn't pass. I also like to always think of the name. I think everyone thought it was okay because my friend Senator McCain supported it when he was running for president. But that name, cap and trade, I'm telling you, I'd be in parades in northern Minnesota and people would yell, no on trade, no on caps. Like it didn't really resonate with people at all. And as I think as we look forward, we have to look less inside the bubble of Washington and what appeals to people when you want to make environmental policy and more outside. We know we all have challenges ahead. Look at the stories today about the smog in northern China, where they've literally had to cancel all their flights, where people can't even get on public transportation, where they've had a 30% increase in visits to the emergency room, where my friend here at my table, from the Dan from the Health Effects Institute, said they only have 200 people in their equivalent of the EPA. We have challenges internationally, and we have challenges here. But let me just give you some hope of how I think we have a roadmap of doing something pragmatic to get our country to where we need to be. My first reason to be optimistic is Gina McCarthy at the EPA. I think that Lisa Jackson, I will note, did a fine job as EPA secretary. And now in the second administration, we have Gina. And I think you look at her background working with Republican governors, her reputation among business leaders as being tough but fair, and her experience navigating the ways of Washington make her well suited to look at some of these bigger picture issues. As someone who comes from the ag state, I know that the EPA can get bogged down in small controversies that may take away from a larger mission. And so I first noted that the rollout that she did of the new greenhouse gas standards for new coal plants, I think it was well done. I think the way she approached the existing plants and said she was going to look at it for this year was also smart. And so I'm feeling good about the work she can do. Secondly, a thing that I think is happening right now is a realistic approach to Congress. The Washington Post this past Sunday ran an editorial where they wrote, "The overriding problem is that Congress hasn't faced up to the global warming threat. Instead of updating clean air rules and building a policy that addresses the unique challenges of greenhouse gas emissions, it has left the EPA and the courts with a strong but sometimes ambiguous law that applies imperfectly to greenhouse emissions." All true. It's all true. So what do we do when it comes to Congress and environmental policy for people that want to see some progress in the next year and a half? I know that my friends in the environmental community have been understandably frustrated by inaction on climate change. I've been frustrated too. But given the current mix, I'd argue that this is a time to rebuild and to make some friends, and in particular, to make some friends on the moderate Republican side of the aisle, and to not ask for perfection from every member of Congress. I would focus, as many are doing now, on some of the efforts going on in the Senate. By the way, it's the Senate that has passed the transportation bill, passed the farm bill, the Senate that I predict will pass the Shaheen-Portman bill, which, as you know, contains a range of policies that would reduce residential, commercial, and industrial energy use, It has the backing of the Sierra Club, the Natural Resources Defense Council, the National Wildlife Federation, to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the National Association of Manufacturers. Another example, the Farm Bill, with the conservation efforts in that bill. This leads to my third reason for hope, and that is that there are a lot of businesses out there that have realized that they can't afford the pure cost of the old way of doing things. More and more businesses are seeing the good in going green, whether it's Walmart and its huge push toward energy efficiency, or companies like Whole Foods and IKEA that are equipping their roofs with solar panels. Target, that's my hometown company, so I couldn't do Walmart and not do Target. Using LED lights equipped with motion detectors so their freezer cases light up only when a customer is nearby. Apple, working toward a goal of getting 100% of its energy from renewables. Unilever adopting the sustainable food production practices of Ben & Jerry's ice cream when it bought the company in 2000. And it's encouraging also to see a group of more than 100 large companies, including several in my state, Cargill, General Mills, Best Buy, 3M, all in my state, come together. We are second per capita for Fortune 500 companies. The first is Connecticut, and they're like the size of an iceberg. So, but these companies have come together to create the sustainability consortium to improve the sustainability of their supply chains. Along those same lines, we're going to hear tonight from our honoree about what they've done in California to make and partner with business and government. Again, all giving me hope. Fourth reason to be positive is that there are some current economic policies, both on the federal and state level, that are working and that are moving us in the right direction, as well as market changes. I've been frustrated, as I mentioned, by our inability to move forward on federal legislation. But what we have done is done a great job of actually reducing our dependence on foreign oil. Between 05 and 12, it has dropped from 60% to 40%. And just yesterday, the Energy Information Administration released its annual report on U.S. energy-related carbon emissions and found that in 2012, these carbon emissions fell to their lowest level since 1994. These achievements are thanks to a combination of many factors. The gas mileage standards I mentioned, the work, biofuels work, the cleaner fuels, the use of natural gas. I was just out with Senator Hoeven looking at what they're doing there. And not just to quote the Washington Post, the Fargo Forum today, which I woke up reading, has an interesting editorial on flaring and the work that has to be done there, not only for the economy but the environment, as they look at increasing their natural gas extraction and what has to be done to better contain that. Other thing that's worked is the state experiments. We're going to hear about California right now. Minnesota has a 25% by 2025 standard. Xcel, our largest energy company, electricity company, held to a 30% standard. They are on track to do it. This was a bill signed by a Democratic legislature and our then governor, Republican Tim Pawlenty. So this can work. It was Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis who said that the states are the laboratories of democracy. And we've certainly seen that right now with our energy and environmental policy. But the problem is that you need a functioning national democracy to have the states be truly the laboratories of democracy. So I am hopeful that once we get to this point of compromise that I truly believe in my heart we're going to get to, that the states will be, again, useful models in the environmental and energy areas for how we can get this done. So that leads me to our award winners tonight, because they are all about how we can get this done. These two men understand that, yes, this is about environmental and energy policy, but it's also about jobs, it's about economic growth, and it's about national security. In the effort to combat global climate change and bring new energy solutions to our country, few people have fought as tirelessly and passionately as Tom Steyer and former Secretary of State George Shultz. Working together, they led a dynamic coalition of business, labor, environmental, and community groups to defeat a California ballot proposition to repeal AB 32, which is California's Global Warming Solution Act, the most significant state program to reduce CO2 emissions and reduce global greenhouse gas emissions. Thanks to Shultz and Steyer's work, AB 32 was soundly defeated by California voters. And the coalition that they founded, Californians for Clean Energy and Jobs, is now helping to lead the way in the promotion of renewable energy jobs, projects, and businesses in California and around the nation. In addition to their work as a team, Schultz and Steyer are both incredibly accomplished leaders. As Ronald Reagan's Secretary of State, Secretary Schultz helped secure the Montreal Ozone Protocol. While serving in the Nixon and Ford administrations, he helped create the Environmental Protection Agency and played a key role in developing U.S. energy policy during the OPEC oil embargo. Still going strong at the age of 93. Sounds pretty good, huh? Secretary Schultz chairs the Hoover Institution Schultz-Stevenson's Task Force on Energy Policy, as well as the advisory boards of the Stanford Precourt Institute for Energy and the Massachusetts Institute of Technology Energy Initiative. Our other honoree tonight, Tom Steyer, founded the global equity management firm Fairlawn Capital Management with his wife, Kat Taylor. He and his wife also created the Tomcat Center for Sustainable Energy and the Steyer-Taylor Center for Energy and Finance, both at Stanford University. Tom established the Yale University Energy Sciences Institute to conduct cutting-edge research on clean energy and the environment. Notably, Tom has given the Giving Pledge, a promise to donate the majority of his wealth to charitable nonprofit purposes. A major part of his pledge has gone to address global climate change. Individually, both Tom and Secretary Schultz have been forces for good in this country. But tonight, we celebrate their unique partnership, a bipartisan effort to advance the environment. They are shining examples of what individuals of differing backgrounds, parties, and generations can do if they work together for the common good. I'm therefore honored to present ELI's prestigious 2013 Environmental Achievement Award to Tom Steyer and George Schultz. Thank you for your outstanding joint contribution to environmental law policy and management.